This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The Pope may have made his northeastern U.S. tour, but another prominent Catholic, perhaps one of America's most prominent Catholics, is coming to Charlotte. In fact, she's here right now in our studio. Sister Simone Campbell is one of the organizers of Nuns on the Bus, a tour by nuns of nine states in 2012 to express opposition for the Ryan budget, which they believed would decimate programs meant to help people in need. That effort fit right into Sister Campbell's quest for social justice on many levels, including greater participation for women in her own church. That quest is also the subject of a documentary called Radical Grace. Sister Simone Campbell is the executive director of NETWRK, a global movement for justice and peace. Sister, welcome back to Charlotte. Welcome back to this program. You were on, I think, by phone a couple of years ago.
I was. So it's really great to be here in person.
Now we all know what each other looks like. We can avoid each other in crowds now.
Good point.
You and the other nuns featured in the opening minutes of that film, Radical Grace, which, by the way, will be screened tonight at 7 at the Great Aunt Stella Center, and you can get information about that on our website at WFAE.org. You and the other nuns featured in that film. You're all talking about problems within the Catholic Church stemming from the 2009 investigations into 59,000 nuns from 140 different orders across the United States. These investigations were examining the religious views and lifestyles of American nuns. Those words sound loaded to me. The Vatican was concerned about a feminist spirit amongst nuns.
What a shock.
In that film, Sister Chris Schenck wonders aloud about what the Vatican meant by feminist. What do you think they meant?
Well, my hunch is they just meant, since it was written by male leadership, they meant anyone who asked tough questions, any woman who asked tough questions. And they really are not used to working in a collaborative fashion with women who have been highly educated. I mean, like, I'm a lawyer, so my job is to ask tough questions. But I think they found that frightening, and it was fear that generated that response.
Are the people in the hierarchy of the clergy, the male hierarchy, are they used to working with anybody, or are they used?
That's a good question.
I'm serious, right? I don't mean that to be pejorative. I mean, is that how the system is set up, that they work amongst themselves?
Well, for a long time, I've really talked about that. The church has a culture of monarchy, and the challenge for the Roman Catholic Church within the U.S. tradition is that our culture as a nation is democracy. And when you have a democracy meeting a monarchy, then there's clashes. And that the bishops are raised to think that they are like kings in their area and that they're the deciders. And anything that asks a question in the democratic style then challenges what they see as the cultural structure of the church.
And yet I would wager that most of the priests and bishops and cardinals and monsignors, et cetera,
all of our layers of authority.
In the American Catholic Church came up through the American system of democracy. So this should not be a surprise to them or foreign to them as it might be in other countries, is it?
Well, except I think what happens is those who are attracted to the leadership track within the Roman Catholic Church are attracted because they like monarchy. They like the idea of power. And that power leads them on. Right now, I say, you know, Pope Francis is changing this dramatically by his approach of being with those who suffer, being with those at the margins, going out to be with the people, being a pastor for the sheep, is the antithesis of this leadership style that they've adopted.
Is this desire for power Christian?
Is it Christian? Well, it's certainly human. And I think Jesus really talked about an alternative power, the power of love, the power of engagement, the power of community. But I think one of the things that happened is that many of the leaders within the church found protecting the institution was more important than Jesus' call to love. And that has been a huge call to conversion for all of us within the church to move into love and away from the power and trappings of authority.
What were the tough questions you were asking that were so concerning to the people that they started an investigation into the American nuns?
Well, I think the fact that we don't wear religious garb, many of us do not wear religious garb.
But isn't that with
garb.
Permission?
Oh, of course it's with permission.
You didn't discard that because you just felt one day, I don't want to wear this anymore.
No, well, everything we've done has been in response to the bishop's Vatican II and the bishop's encouragement. Like my organization, Network, was founded in direct response to the U.S. bishop's call to work for systemic change, to work to live the gospel in working to create federal policy. But it's this very thing that upset them when we had a different political analysis than they did. And it really is so much about politics and the control that they wished they had. Mm. There's also some theory that some of the investigation was about trying to be able to take some of the properties that Catholic sisters own to replenish the coffers of diocesan and archdiocesan treasuries. And so there was some effort at that in the beginning of the investigation. But when the lawyer said, well, if you do take the sisters' property, then you have to reopen the various settlements that have been made in the sexual abuse scandal. And so then they backed off that part. But, it's humanity is at the heart of the church. It'd be nice if it were just the Holy Spirit.
Well, speaking of the Holy Spirit, one of the other nuns in that movie says that either the Spirit is speaking through all of us or none of us. Every organization has leaders. Every organization has rules that have to be followed. Every organization has defining principles about what it means to be a member of that organization. And if those things aren't followed, if those rules aren't enforced, doesn't that organization, any organization, face extinction? I'm trying to give the benefit of the doubt here to the,
right.
the church.
And I think that that's the big question. What are those rules? What are the appropriate rules? And like the bishops were upset that we at our little organization Network took a position that was different than them on the Affordable Care Act. Mm. We supported it. The bishops opposed it. I'd read the bill. I knew what the bill said. It didn't support abortion, but the bishops got bad advice. Their advisors
from whom?
Partially from their bishop's staff. The bishop's staff are lay folks who have many of whom have strong connections to mostly very conservative senators and members of Congress. And so their staff told the bishops that there was federal funding of abortion in the Affordable Care Act. There's not. And that's why they came out opposing the Affordable Care Act and why we came out in favor of it.
I don't even know where to begin to unpack to unpack that. As you said, the church is made up of humanity.
Yes.
At its core, they're human beings. But is it the job of a church to have advisors who are politically connected?
Well,
any church, not just the Catholic Church.
Right. I think that the rationale that's used is this idea that they want to make sure that there are good laws that don't infringe on the church and also that support the various works of the church. So like Catholic Charities cares about federal funding for mm-hmm. many of the services that they provide. And quite frankly, Catholic Church organizations are probably some of the use a lot of federal money to serve communities. That's what they care about. But then it's sort of a slippery slope when you care about funding for your programs versus how do you care about policies that are being made. And when there was there's a new book out, The Francis Effect by John Gehring, that talks about how the church leadership was wooed by the Republican Party in the 70s and 80s, and that courtship then created a more and more conservative reality. They sort of got seduced by this idea of being able to go to the White House. And I can understand it. It can be seductive. But the thing is, we've got to stay rooted in the gospel.
The very idea that American nuns were investigated.
I know. Yeah.
Is that indicative to you and others of a fundamental systemic problem within the Catholic Church itself?
Well, I think it was certainly evidence of a problem that our mission was not understood. The bishop's role, they have seen the role as protecting the institution. Our role as Catholic sisters is to take the gospel to where it wouldn't be otherwise, to be with those who are most challenged, most vulnerable, most in need. And so, like in my own ministry over the years, I'm a lawyer, and I started a low-cost legal service center to serve the working poor. And we did all of the high-conflict, low-income family law cases in Alameda County in California. But our goal was to be with struggling families. And when you're with struggling families, it changes your perspective, just as when you're taking care of the institution, it changes your perspective. And so really what happened was that because of our two different lived experiences, we had two different worldviews. And the bishops were trying to control our worldview to be like theirs, but our lived experience is different. And so I kept saying to them, come meet my people. Come meet my people. Because if you saw my people, you would understand my life.
I can understand why the bishops may not be out there on the streets, because they have an administrative job, quite
exactly.
honestly.
Theirs is a different role.
Different role. But what about the parish priests? They're out there, and don't they speak to the bishops? Don't they have weight because they're part of the club?
The hard thing is in a hierarchical system is that the idea that the parish priest would weigh in, with some it makes a difference, with some bishops it makes a difference. But the really sad part is that fear has been very strong within the Catholic Church, and local priests have been afraid to lift up the experiences of their people.
We're going to talk about this more extensively, but one of the things that you and some of the other nuns would like to see is greater participation of women in the church.
What a radical thought.
Yes. Yeah, and a higher profile and greater jobs. I'm not, maybe even becoming priests. Let's take it to the nth degree there. If that does not happen, and we'll talk about why you want that and why you think that should be done, but if that does not happen, if women are kept in the roles they have today when they are minimized in your view, do you see a future for the church?
I think the future will continue. I mean, any group that's bumbled along as sporadically and interestingly as the Roman Catholic Church, it'll continue. I mean, really, for me, it's about the Holy Spirit. Any group that took 350 years to figure out Galileo might be right and we continued despite that blindness, it's a bigger story than that.
Were these investigations into the nuns and their lifestyles and what they believed and what they were talking about, were they more vigorous than the investigations the church conducted into the child?
Into the molestation. And the abuse.
Absolutely. What does
absolutely.
That say about the
well,
church?
Well, it says that the leadership was frightened, and so they projected onto others their own. I mean, this happens often psychologically, that when you've got a problem inside yourself, the first place we look for it is outside.
This is really difficult for people, I think, within the Catholic Church and outside the Catholic Church, who look at all this going on and think these people are supposed to be the moral leaders of the world.
Exactly.
And
they were they failed in that role.
And they failed twice, evidently, because if they are scared and they're going after somebody else, that's immoral as well.
But look what happened out of that. Out of that came the people in the United States, not just Catholics, but all kinds of people standing up for us. And I really thought we were unseen in our society because we don't wear habits. We're not noticed. We just do our work. And all of a sudden we had the United States standing up saying, we love the sisters. We stand with the sisters. So something good came out of it.
The shift away from habits happened
50 years ago.
Yeah, 50 years ago.
My whole religious life.
And it does matter. I have 30 seconds. It does make you invisible. Why be invisible? Why not wear the habit? Be completely visible to the world.
Because it separates us from the people we serve. We want to be with the people and be in relationship and not intimidating. That's who we are.
Sister Simone Campbell is our guest, organizer of Nuns on the Bus, the tour that went through the country a couple of years ago, executive director of Network, which is a social justice organization, and the subject, one of several subjects, in a film called Radical Grace, which premieres tonight in Charlotte. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and TRCW, a locally owned and operated boutique for women featuring European and American designer clothing, sportswear, and accessories. In Phillips Place, next to Taylor Richards and Conger, details at trcstyle.com. And exploreboon.com, featuring winter activities and adventures for all ages, including choose and cut Christmas tree farms, skiing, snowboarding, and more. Step outside yourself at exploreboon.com. Several years ago, the Body Worlds exhibit came to Discovery Place. Now an all-new version is coming. We'll hear about that and hear from one Charlotte woman who saw it last time and said it changed her life. We'll hear her story, and we'll go inside the inner workings of the Carolina Panthers 9-0 season tomorrow at 9. All right, Tuesday, December 1st is Giving Tuesday, to give back to nonprofit organizations in your community, and we hope that when you do, you will support us at WFAE.org.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, President Obama is expected to send Congress a plan to close the prison at Guantanamo Bay. Where the remaining prisoners are likely to be sent, chances of congressional approval, and why some say there are implications for national security.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest today is Sister Simone Campbell, organizer of Nuns on the Bus. I'm told that there have been more than one Nuns on the Bus tour. Now, you put all that money out for that big, beautiful bus, you better use it. And so they've been they've taken about four tours, and they came through Charlotte, what, last fall to get the vote out, just to get people to vote, not on any particular issue. Just go out and vote.
Get engaged. Be part of our democracy. Vote.
As I said, you are the executive director of an organization called Network, which was, I think, developed in 1971. I don't know that you were the founder of it, but
no, I was a youngin' then.
And we talked about this the last time you were on. It works for social justice, which to me is a pillar of Christianity, the whole concept of social justice. Given all the talk we have in this country about being a Christian nation, whether we are or not is immaterial, there are people who believe it. How much success have you seen with your efforts?
Well, I'm not sure it's because we're a Christian nation, but we have seen some success. The things we work on are for those at the economic margins of our society. And like the Affordable Care Act was really important for getting health care to those that are left out of our health system. Unfortunately, here in North Carolina, y'all have an expanded Medicaid to cover those most vulnerable. But our work really on the Hill, on Capitol Hill, was to make sure that health care was accessible, affordable, and quality for everyone. It's shocking that in the richest nation on earth, we're unable to get quality health care.
Well, that was the point of my question, that and several other issues that you travel the country talking about. If we really do believe, and many people do, that we are a Christian country,
right,
and that we are a moral country and we wear the white hat in the world, why do we have a problem with extending things like health care and taking care of the least among us, when that is what Jesus told us to do?
Oh, you have such a radical thought. You fit in on the bus quite well. The challenge is that it's
I'm just
really
asking questions. I didn't say I agreed. I'm just asking questions here.
Oh, but your pesky mind went to the right place. The challenge is our individualism, that too often Christianity or any faith is seen as a personal issue that does not have communal consequences. And the when you really read the gospel is all about us being together. St. Paul says that we're all together, we are one body, and we've got different parts in the body, but that we work together. In our very rich society, we've lost sight of the fact that we're communal, that we hold a responsibility, or as I've said, that we are our sister's keeper, we are our brother's keeper, and we need to remember that.
Well, you see a just society as one that includes all and values people over the accumulation of profits.
Amen.
Where does the United States fit into that, and where does the Catholic Church fit into that?
Well, after Pope Francis's visit, it was fabulous to have him here in September, where he lifted up this very issue. And our organization has been working on mend the gap between the very rich and the very poor. It's not saying that it's a problem that people have money. The problem is that there's not sharing going on. And the fact that the bottom 20% in our country have lost income over the last 34 years, while the top 1%, 1% has, I mean, their income has grown over 200%. So the top 1% is this huge increase, while the bottom is experiencing a decrease basically because of flat wages and inflation. So we say what we need to do is bridge the gap. We need to go back to a nation, which we had between 1949 and 1979, where everybody's income went up about 100%. That was a better place.
But is that possible? That happened.
Oh, absolutely.
That happened in large measure because we were the only industrial nation in the world able to produce anything in the aftermath of World War II. Everybody else's economy was decimated. Their factories were decimated. We had the East and the West, Japan and Germany and much of Europe in ruins. And we got a head start. So is it possible to go back to that in an economy that is now worldwide and not American focused?
Well, absolutely it is, because really what it was tax policy that changed. You're right about the growth, the engagement, the growth of our economy generally. But the way the profits were shared was because of some very basic federal policies. One is tax policy. The top tier of income was taxed at 80%. So that if you were going to be taxed at 80%, there wasn't an incentive to pay high salaries because you weren't going to get that much out of it. Another tax policy that made a difference was this whole idea of investment income. When we got sold the idea that every individual should invest their retirement money, they could do better themselves, then they had this idea that, okay, we're going to give you on interest and dividends and capital gains, we're going to reduce that income down to 15%. Well, that's really nice. Only, do you know, about 60% of us don't have any savings that are benefiting from this? And then those that do are in the top 1%, and they figured out this clever little scheme. So the only tax rate they pay is at this reduced rate of 15%. Those kinds of policies have preferenced our income and wealth disparity. We can change that. It didn't used to be this way. We can make a difference. So we say, bring our country together. Have us all participate in the benefit of our amazing economy. That's all we're asking.
All of this predates Paul Ryan.
Yes, it does.
But one of the things that the Nuns on the Bus Tour talked about, and it's featured in this film called Radical Grace, was your objections to the what is now ancient history, I guess, the Paul Ryan.
Well, that's so last year.
That's right. So last week.
Yeah.
The Paul Ryan budget, which proposed to cut taxes
absolutely
for the rich. And you believed that this was going to happen at the expense of the poor. And you say he made you mad.
He did.
By saying that he was proposing the structure of that budget because it supported his, and this is a quote, Catholic social teaching. What is Catholic social teaching on this particular issue? Is there social teaching on tax policy and budget policy?
Well, there's actually social teaching on our responsibility as a nation to care for those who are left out. And Pope Francis was a great conveyor of this message when he was here, when he spoke to Congress about their responsibility that an economy that's out of control, an economy left to run itself, is going to succumb to ordinary human greed. We call it in the Catholic tradition, we call it original sin, and that the role of government is to provide a container, because we are our best selves when we work together, and that's what government's supposed to do, is to be our best selves and find a way forward. This idea that the economy can just take care of it on its own, that's fine, because then as long as I'm in charge, then I get the most. Mm-hmm. The fact is that our economy is not serving our nation, and that's what we need to
but
change.
There are a lot of people who say, you know, the government, it's not in, the government should provide certain services. It should provide national defense and a couple of other things. And the poor, the people who fall through the cracks, that's why we have NGOs. That's why we have charitable organizations run in large part by churches and
right.
faith groups. So why can't the Catholic Church and the Southern Baptists and the Presbyterians and the Lutherans and the Jewish organizations take care of those who fall through the cracks?
Well, if it were only people falling through the cracks, we might have a chance. But the fact is that business has become dependent on these safety net programs. We were just in Fayetteville, Arkansas on our recent bus trip, and we heard that from the food pantry there that Walmart pays $5 million a year to food pantries around the country to have them send staff to their stores to register their employees for food stamps. Food stamps is no longer longer just a safety net falling through the cracks issue. Food stamps is how low-wage workers survive and feed their families. So this is not a hammock for people to lounge around in. This is a hammock for business that refuses to pay living wages to their people. So I think if it were just those who were unemployed, we might stand a chance. But Paul Ryan's budget, that cut so much money just out of food stamps alone that every church, every synagogue, every mosque, every house of worship in the United States would each have to raise an additional $50,000 every year for 10 years to make up the difference. I mean, that won't work. That won't work. I don't know about if you have a church, but I know my church, we couldn't do it. We scrape by as it is, and we provide as many services as we can. But an additional $50,000? I don't think so.
But the Catholic Church, I'm told, is the richest organization on the planet.
Well, yeah, but it seems to be in statues and paintings, and it's really hard to use that as a way to feed hungry folk. So
isn't that a systemic problem?
Oh, it's certainly a systemic problem, and Pope Francis is raising that as an issue, which is kind of cool. It's making some that's why there's this huge tension in the Catholic Church right now that really is not so much about women's leadership and all these other things. That's an easy dodge, but it's really about leaders who came up in a different culture, a culture of more conservative, more rule-bound approach, and they're resisting Pope Francis's leadership. So I say we have a challenge with middle management right now in the Catholic Church.
It occurs to me that there may be listeners who would like to ask you a question or make a comment, and you can do that by reaching us at WFAE through Facebook or Twitter, or you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. After today's program, I'm told that you will be attending a business roundtable here in Charlotte. Will these issues come up? Is that why you're attending this roundtable?
Well, we're actually convening the roundtable because what I realize is I talk about the 100%, that we have to be a nation that cares for the 100%. And the folks at the top, I mean, they are really important in the 100%. But I want to understand what business contributes to the common good and what business needs from the common good to flourish. And so this is, I think, our 14th roundtable that we've convened this year. It's a first one here in Charlotte. We've done them all over the country. But it's trying to understand how business in various parts of our country contribute to the common good.
So what do you hear from business leaders when you convene these roundtables? Are your ideas considered to be radical or workable or we've never thought of that before? Or how do they react to you?
Well, it really varies by region. In Colorado, in Denver, we convened a roundtable and I asked, well, what makes this a good business climate? Because everybody had been saying it was such a good business climate. And they said, oh my heavens, we've got a governor, we've got a mayor who brings everybody to the table, the NGOs, the business, and we find a way forward. We solve our problems. And government's leadership is critical in that. A few weeks later, I was in Gainesville, Florida, and they were talking about, oh, we have a good business climate. And, well, what makes good business climate? They said, oh, government is so tied up with themselves and political fights, they don't get involved at all. They don't have anything. So in one place, leadership is seen as critical. In the other, keeping them out is seen as critical. So I don't understand how all that plays together, but those are two really distinct regional views.
But surely the idea of paying a living wage, whether it's raising the minimum wage or a living wage that is geared to the local economy, a living wage in Charlotte is very different from a living wage in Manhattan.
Oh,
so,
absolutely.
So when those issues come up, is that seen as impossible? Is it seen as radical? Is it just taken off the table? Or do they begin to see your point of view? What's the reaction?
Well, what happens is that I raised that issue about the safety net and food stamps and it becoming a business subsidy. And was that a right thing to do in Denver? And one of the entrepreneurs at the table said, well, why wouldn't business take an edge if you can get it? Well, what happened was I didn't have to say a word. The rest many of the folks at the roundtable said, well, that would be wrong because, you know, that's taking advantage of a government system. Then my tax dollars are funding your taking an edge. And so they had a really interesting conversation among themselves about where the ethical responsibility was. And I think the majority in that setting thought, oh, no, business should pay its own cost. Because isn't that the idea of the market where prices cover the cost of doing business? I always thought that was the market. And here we've got folks who are claiming to be market taking advantage of the of government subsidies for those who are most destitute. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to hold business accountable, have these kinds of conversations. But on the whole, we find folks at the roundtable are eager to continue the conversation. They have no place to have this conversation.
You want the church, the Catholic Church, to get behind changes in the economy that would be beneficial to those in need. And you are a nun. You're not a priest. You're not in the hierarchy of the church. They've investigated
Praise
you.
Praise God.
So what do you see the church as doing? What could they do if they got behind, if they began to think like you think? What could they do to make these things happen?
Well, look at Pope Francis. Pope Francis is doing this. I mean, that's what the joy of my heart is. When he spoke to Congress, I got to be in the chambers.
Yes.
And he spoke about the responsibility to bring, you know, like President Lincoln, Dr. King, Dorothy Day, and Thomas Merton, all about being responsible and carrying out policy for those at the margins. If we even had half an idea, a half a thought as a nation about who we're leaving out, how do we bring people in, that would be a huge step forward.
The hierarchy is certainly aware of you and the other, other
it
nuns.
It appears so,
Is
yes.
Pope Francis aware of you?
I think he might be. We were really excited on our bus trip just before he came. We gathered video clips of various people telling their stories about how they were trying to bridge divides, because mm-hmm. that's what he calls for. And we put it on a tablet, and a high-ranking government official gave it to him just before he left. And it was in a Nuns on the Bus box, so I think he's heard of it.
One of the things that the Vatican took issue with was that you did not – you weren't falling in line behind church – not teachings, but church policy on things like gay marriage, abortion, making women priests. That was years ago during this investigation. Have things changed under the current pope? Is that investigation on the shelf? Is it over? Is it closed? Is it done?
Yeah, it's done. It's done. And we all made nice and said, oh, we learned so much from each other. But you know what? I really think that the bishops who led the investigation of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, that was the investigation where our little organization got mentioned as a bad influence. That I think those bishops learned an alternative way for conversation, because they expected us to be confrontational and to the barricades kind of approach. Mm-hmm. But what we did was we continued our mission. Our mission is to engage in reflective conversation and find mutual ways forward. And so they were a little surprised when the sisters came in and asked, well, what is the bishop's experience? What's tough for you? How do you struggle in faith to be faithful to the gospel? And asking that question, I think, really surprised.
You came into orders at a much earlier time in the church's history. You took your vows early.
Old.
and it was probably a very different church back then. Do you, when this investigation was launched and when people criticize you, do you take a step back and think, am I doing the right thing? I did pledge myself to Jesus. I did pledge myself to the Catholic Church and what it believes and teaches. And here I am going against the grain. Does it give you a pause, the moment of pause?
Oh, of course it does. And it was hurtful. But the fact is that the gospel challenges us to be at the margins. That's what Jesus does. But we have to look at it. While it was painful, and yes, I had a couple of days of being frightened and concerned, but the fact is we just kept doing our mission. And from my perspective, the Holy Spirit used that criticism to shine a spotlight on our organization. You have to know, 4 days before the censure, we celebrated 40 years of being involved in this work on Capitol Hill. And the big question was, how do we get our name out there? Well, we never thought that the Vatican was going to be the answer to our prayer. So, I mean, you have to.
The Lord works in mysterious ways.
So we say, should we send the Vatican a thank you note? I don't know.
You are radical. You're a troublemaker. Sister Simone Campbell, our guest. We have to take a break. We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Parsec Financial, wealth management for individuals, businesses, and trust services. Details at parsecfinancial.com or by phone 704-334-0894. And Queen City Audio, Video, and Appliances, local purveyors of premium appliances since 1952, including KitchenAid. More information about KitchenAid's new look at queencityonline.com. Following the attacks in Paris, more than half the nation's governors say they will refuse to accept Syrian refugees in their states. So in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, Diane Rehm and her guests talk about the legal issues, security risks, and politics surrounding the resettlement of Syrian refugees in the United States. By the way, our guest today, Sister Simone Campbell, organizer of Nuns on the Bus, is in town to be part of the premiere of Radical Grace, a screening at the Great Aunt Stella Center on November the 18th at 7 p.m. And you can get information about that on our website at WFAE.
It's your world. We help you explore it.
Astronomers spotted what they think is the most distant object ever seen in the solar system.
It's your community. We help you understand it.
JCSU officials approved a campus chapter of Student Veterans of America. Today, they officially opened the campus's Veteran Support Hub.
Morning Edition on WFAE is an essential way to start your day and stay connected to your world. Listen weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Sister Simone Campbell is our guest, executive director of NETWRC, which is a social justice organization, I believe run by nuns. Which order of nuns are you a member of?
I'm a sister of social service. We're a community founded in 1923 in Budapest, Hungary, and 1926 in Los Angeles. So my community is based in California, and we've had politics in our bones from the very beginning because our foundress, Margaret Schlachta, was the first woman in the Hungarian parliament when she was the head of our community. We've always seen that to live the gospel, to live Catholic social teaching, is to be both in direct service but also in policy, that you need the two together. It's called the 2 feet of justice.
Now, Pope Francis has come into the church at a particularly interesting time, and he's making some, just by his very presence and some of the things he says casually, not to mention the things he says officially,
formally, right?
And the way he has chosen to live as Pope are turning things on their head.
Yes.
In the Catholic Church. Is he a turning point or is he a blip in history?
Well, as they say in Spanish, vamos a ver, we will see. It's hard to know. I sincerely hope it's a turning point. It's hard for me to imagine that another person elected to Pope will go back and live in the papal apartments after Pope Francis has been living in the hostel in Rome. It's also hard for me to imagine that the retrenchment into a rule-based church can really make that big of a turn. But the fact is that I think the biggest change is that he touches people's lives in a way that touches the heart and concern.
Yeah, when he came, when he did his little trip here from Washington, D.C. into Philadelphia and New York, the crowds were enormous.
Yes.
The affection for him that was displayed by Catholics and non-Catholics alike was astounding.
Yes.
What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's that we are so hungry for an authentic, loving presence. It doesn't exist in our world. On our bus trip just before he came, we took his message to places that it might not go. And we were in Little Rock, Arkansas, and this woman ran after me after I'd gotten off the bus. She ran after me and said, "I'm an atheist, but this is my Pope too. I'm so glad you're doing this." And I think for her, it was this a loving presence that said we should care for each other, that we were connected. She didn't feel alone with him. That amazing capacity to connect heart to heart heals and relaxes people in a way that says we are community.
I don't want to compare him to Pope Benedict because it's like night and day.
Yes.
But let's go back. Is he like Pope Paul? Is he like Pope John Paul? Is he like John the 23rd?
I mean, I think he's most like John the 23rd, who was a cardinal elected from my very young days. I remember him. And his whole approach was to be pastoral, to throw open the windows of the church, to welcome everyone in. And he wrote the first letter to all people of goodwill. And Pope Francis now has written his letter, his encyclical, to everyone on the earth, even those who don't hold goodwill, saying that we have to care for our earth and we have to care for each other.
And he wants the church to be a welcoming church. And he stresses humility and he stresses mercy and he's urged priests to drop the extravagant trappings of office. He has done just that. He has been critical of capitalism. He has embraced climate change as a moral issue.
Absolutely.
A lot of this is resonating with a lot of people, Catholics and non-Catholics alike around the world. What's happening inside the church, however?
Oh, inside the church hierarchy, it's a huge struggle. In fact, they've just been meeting in Baltimore. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops has been meeting in Baltimore, and there is a serious division among our bishops about whether or not they're Pope Francis bishops or are they Pope Benedict bishops. Are they about the rule or are they about the heart of justice? And there's been some close votes. There's been a lot of tension. But one of the things I have to rejoice in is finally there's some conversation in the Catholic Church, because there's been a lot of fear, a lot of anxiety. A lot of our priests and leaders were frightened about being turned into Rome. There was this whole we heard about all of these fairly conservative, to the right, wealthy lay Catholics writing to Rome about every problem they had. Our little retreat house, my community's retreat house out in California, got written up and sent into Rome because we had a labyrinth, which they have in the Chartres Cathedral in France. But having a labyrinth was wrong, according to some conservative Catholics who are wealthy contributors to Rome. And so not only did they get this letter, but Rome was spending time investigating us because we had a labyrinth. I mean, it was like, excuse me, but I think you started it in the Roman, in the, you know, the French cathedral. But that they spent time investigating created fear. Francis is ending that fear.
You know, there's a moment, you talk about how certain things have been established by the church a long time ago,
right,
and that
right.
The church seems to have forgotten. And there's a moment in the film, Radical Grace, where a group of nuns from your group go to Rome.
Yes.
And it's a group of women, lay people as well as nuns.
Right.
And they go to Rome, and they're going through the catacombs, and they're through several churches, and they're seeing on the walls of the churches artwork depicting women holding up the Eucharist.
Yes.
Women that appear to be in priestly garb.
Exactly.
One, I believe, is a bishop.
Exactly.
Now, this is all pre, well, I think, 600.
Actually, it's pre-1100.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So at some point in time, there is at least, if not written evidence, historical evidence, that women had a greater role in the church then than they do today. And
absolutely.
At some point, the men said, no more.
Enough of it. Yes. Well, and actually, there's written evidence in the Acts of the Apostles all about the women who funded the early churches. They were wealthy widows who made the church grow and mm-hmm. flourish. And what Sister Chris Schenck is doing is this amazing work with the archaeology, because we don't have the early writings of the women, but we have the archaeology that shows places of worship where women came together, where women were the leaders, where women served in deacon roles and also priestly roles.
Mm-hmm.
So uncovering the past is always helpful.
Does the church deny it, or do they simply say that was then, this is now?
I think they don't even know that there's something there to worry about. For them, this is how it's always been, because this is how it's always been in their lifetime. And what Sister Chris is lifting up in such a fabulous way is the fact that, no, it's wrong. You don't know the truth of the past.
To the secular world, a lot of what you talk about, a lot of your positions are right in step with modern life. Now, there may be conservatives, so secular conservatives who don't agree with what you think, but there a lot of people have seen the world move in this direction.
Right.
The church has not moved there yet. You appear, therefore, to be very out of step with the church. If the church is out of step with modernity, what's the risk?
Well, I think that it's who do you say is the church? Pope Francis's recent encyclical was totally in step with modernity and with the current crises that we're facing and engaging. And his big move is for dialogue among all factions of the church. But I think there is fear that if we don't hold up the walls and the barricades, who are we? And that's an identity question. For me, Jesus in the gospel is always about being engaged in whatever's happening around us. That's the effort.
Pope Francis seems to be in step with you, maybe not in every issue, but he certainly seems to be walking in your direction, shall we say. And as you said, the church is a monarchy.
Yeah, it is.
Not a democracy. It's a monarchy. So if he believes these things, why doesn't he just say, this is how it's going to be from here on?
Because what he's really trying to do is open up dialogue within the church. In his exhortation, Joy of the Gospel, he says that dialogue is more important than being right, that we shouldn't protect our turf, but we should engage in conversation together because we're in this together and I need to know your view, you need to know mine. He also says that stories of real people are more important than any theory I have. So he's trying to gather stories.
But he's the head guy. He's the vicar of Christ.
He could do it. I know, and I wish he would agree with me and just do it. But he sees something that's deeper and more important, uh-huh. is that we need everybody's voice at the table. And that's what he's trying to
create. So that's the humility that he's stressing. Because he could do it, but he doesn't do it.
But he doesn't, because he thinks the way forward is really to nourish different perspectives and different voices. And in fact, his very going to Philadelphia for when he came to the U.S. was all going towards one of his strongest critics. Archbishop Chaput is from Philadelphia, is one of his strongest critics. And what does he do? He goes towards Archbishop Chaput with love and says, yes, I care for you, my brother, too, even though you disagree with me.
Mm. Let's take some listener comments and questions here. Dennis in Mooresville, three questions.
Whoa.
One, will Bishop Jugis from the Charlotte Diocese be meeting with you?
No. We reached out, but the bishop's actually up in the Baltimore at the November meeting, so he's not in town.
What is your stand on same-sex marriage, not as a sacrament, but as a legitimate civil contract?
Well, I really support a civil contract. I practiced family law for a long time, 18 years in Oakland, and got appointed by the court to represent a young little girl of a lesbian couple. And the couple was breaking up. And one was the biological mom. The one had no claim to her. And there was no provision in California law for that little girl to continue to have contact with the two people that she knew as parents. It was tragic. It was wrong. So I say, let's provide all families the capacity to maintain relationships to benefit their kids.
But what about gay marriage? This pope is the first pope to utter the word gay. He did it on an airplane in front of reporters. And he's sending kind of a mixed message. He's saying, who am I to judge on the one hand? On the other hand, ain't nothing changing within the Catholic Church with regard to gay marriage. Should it? I mean, if Jesus is about love, and love is between two people, should it be permitted in the church? Or is that above your pay grade to talk about?
Well, I got in trouble for saying something was above my pay grade before. But the fact is, the sacramental piece, I'm really for making sure that there is a way for a couple to commit themselves in a formal, recognized fashion. I don't quite understand sacrament. Our whole approach to sacraments of marriage is that it's the couple that generates the sacrament and that the church honors that sacrament. So it could be, I don't know, that a couple who makes a commitment, even though they are of the same sex, if they're making the commitment, then maybe they've got the sacrament and we're just slow to identify it. I don't know. I don't know that part. What I do know is I want civil protections for families, for kids.
Okay. Stephanie on Facebook writes, if you just talked about the substantial wealth of the Catholic Church locked up in statues and a painting. Why not sell those? They will still be loved and cared for, and then the Catholic Church would have some apparently much-needed funds for the people who are in need of assistance. Isn't this the same greed as the corporations and top 1%? Let me just say a personal thing here.
Yes.
I went to the Vatican once. They have some of the great art treasures of the Western, of the world, not even the Western world, of the world. I would think that many of those things are simply priceless. You couldn't sell them because no one could afford them.
Well, I think that's probably true. I've also heard that the art world, after Pope Francis became pope, that the art world sent some emissaries begging him not to put too much on the market because it would drive everybody else's prices down. So because some are priceless. And so I think there's probably a issue, some market issues. But I think what really needs to be focused on is how do we use this? How do we let people benefit from it? Because the other point that is in the gospel is how important beauty is in everyone's lives. And so do those who are most left out have a chance to enjoy beauty, enjoy the visions of these amazing works of art? And Pope Francis has worked really hard in Rome to make sure that the homeless people get to benefit from it, that they have a place to stay, they have a place to shower. He hired out of, I don't exactly understand his finances, but out of his own money, barbers to come in on a regular basis so the homeless can get their hair cut and get shaves. Care for each other, and then we'll make a difference.
Frank writes, what does business contribute to the common good? Business is the source of all wealth. There is no other source. All the wealth of the Catholic Church came from business. Business not only provides livelihood for its employees that in turn pay taxes, but business pays taxes and also invests or contributes to community causes. Show me a country without a viable business climate, and you will see equal poverty for all and no wealth for anyone. Real equality means everyone is equally poor.
Well, I don't quite agree with that. Our current system is a market-based system. And that is true. The fact is, in a feudal system, it was a land-based system, not a market-based system. And if you held the land, then you were wealthy. I think the real challenge is business to see itself as part of the communal whole, that they have a responsibility to each other. A whole bunch of the big companies within the United States don't pay a dime in taxes. General Electric has gotten by without paying any federal taxes for years, because they buy up companies that have big debts so that they can write those debts off. And they buy it for a dollar, and then they write off millions of dollars on their tax returns. So I don't think that's right. And then General Electric gets a lot of federal contracts. They don't contribute a thing to the common coffers. So I think that we need a shared business climate where people share in making our nation what it is. And sharing is what we think is the heart of it.
Robbie writes, it's a pleasure to hear Sister Simone speak the truth plainly. If she were to join Elizabeth Warren in a presidential bid, I'd sing a few hallelujahs. What has your notoriety done for you and the work that you've been trying to do for your entire adult life?
Well, it's a bit shocking. It's a bit surprising. But it has drawn attention to our work, which is hugely important for us. I think one of the reasons that our country is now aware of some of the issues of poverty is because of the first bus trip and because of being able to have opportunities like this, to have this conversation, to lift up the challenges of our time. But I have to confess that it's a bit surprising when I get recognized some places. I was walking on the street in Portland, Oregon, and a woman came up to me, Sister Simone! And I realized, oh my heavens, I have to be good all the time now in public.
So. Or they'll wrap your knuckles with a ruler. Sister Simone.
Oh, I'll sue you. I'm a lawyer. I'm not a teacher.
Sister Simone Campbell, thank you for the hour.